Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. It's been a couple weeks since both of us have been here, so we've got three very interesting stories here for you. Good news, bad news, and crazy news for conservatives. And Jim, let's start with what we think is the good news. In Libya, it would appear that Muammar Gaddafi's days are numbered. Of course, you can pretty much find a headline with that same sentiment anytime in the last 5 months. But it's looking pretty good. They claim, the rebels do, that they've got 95% of the city surrounded. Pretty much Gaddafi's compound is all that's left. We now have some conflicting reports about whether any of his sons or how many of his sons are in custody. He's only giving audio messages to his people at this point, which makes some suggest that he's already fled. Either way, this is the closest we've been to seeing him go down since probably the early stages before the U.S. even got involved.
Yeah, it's worth noting that by the time people hear this, maybe we'll know what Gaddafi's fate is. At some point, kind of illustrating the confusion last night, Seth Meyers of Saturday Night Live said by Twitter that Gaddafi with a Q is believed to be at large. Gaddafi with a G has left the country, and Gaddafi with a K, is his whereabouts are unknown. So the idea that, you know, Gaddafi has always been had an air of mystery about him, and perhaps is the final chapter of his life will have a similar tone to it. I'm sure a lot of listeners out there probably are not quite certain that this is all going to turn out well for the United States. Concerns that those who will take power in the vacuum left by Gaddafi will be Islamist in nature, perhaps even allied with al-Qaeda. And that's something we have to, you know, keep an eye on. Like all listeners, I'm sure President Obama is on top of it over in Martha's Vineyard. I'm sure he's completely focused on the beach as he looks at this. If nothing else, Muammar Gaddafi has the blood of Americans on his hands. Right. And so we should be cheering his departure from power. And if he ends up not merely stepping out of the country, but stepping out of this life, then we should be, you know, pleased with that as well. So this is a bit of long-delayed justice. In my home office, I have a poster entitled Bedtime for Brezhnev. It's a parody of Ronald Reagan's old movie posters, depicting him as a cowboy taking on Leonid Brezhnev dressed up as Black Bart. And one of the henchmen in that poster is Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, you know, decked out in black hat. So he has he may be finally finding justice. And so it's one of those things where that we can applaud wholeheartedly. Lots of questions remain about what's going to be the fate of Libya and whether this will ultimately be good or bad for American interests. But if nothing else, Muammar's troubles can give us a warm, fuzzy feeling on this Monday morning.
Absolutely right. Seeing him go brings tears to hopefully nobody's eyes except his own. And good job by the American pilots who have carried the heavy lifting and the sorties for the NATO operation. Whatever you think of the mission, it's pretty clear based on what we knew of the rebels and their fighting capabilities that they would not be there without the American intervention. I would just point out one more thing. The last time Jim Garrity came back from a week-long vacation, Osama bin Laden was killed. This time, Gaddafi's got at least one foot in the grave. And I don't know where you're going for Thanksgiving, but Bashar Assad is not going to be feeling real secure around that time.
The lesson is I need more weeks off. So please forward your request to Rich Lowry.
Exactly right. Well, on to martini number two now, and that's always the negative one. And we head to the Republican presidential race. Last week, a fourth grader, clearly prompted by his mother, was asking Rick Perry, I think it was in New Hampshire, a series of loaded questions about how old the Earth is. Does Texas teach evolution in the public schools? And Perry went on to explain the evolution creation balance, which Kevin Williamson pointed out online isn't actually true. They mainly teach evolution in Texas. And then, of course, he's been very clear that he's not buying the hype on man-made global warming. So John Huntsman, the former governor of Utah, clearly looking for a niche in this race, given his 69 votes that he secured in the Iowa straw poll, decided to make sure that he's the pro-science guy in the Republican Party. Here's what he had to say Sunday on This Week.
When we take a position that isn't willing to embrace evolution, when we take a position that basically runs counter to what 98 of 100 climate scientists have said, what the National Academy of Sciences has said about what is causing climate change and man's contribution to it, I think we find ourselves on the wrong side of science and therefore in a losing position.
Jim, I don't know what polls Governor Huntsman is reading here, but the number of conservatives or even moderate Republicans who embrace any sort of global warming agenda is certainly not very big. The number of Americans who believe that we're contributing in even a moderate way to that is slipping. And obviously, there's plenty of people who have debates about the origins of the Earth as well. So I'm not sure who he's going to appeal to other than people who can't vote for him in primaries.
Yeah, there's something kind of bothersome and tragic about this. I realize there are a lot of listeners out there who will probably say good riddance to John Huntsman the day he leaves the Republican race. From early on, I remember thinking, look, a guy who had served for President Obama as his ambassador to China had a certain potential to be have a unique role in the race, and he really could have, I think he could have had a much bigger impact than he's had so far. I figured, you know, Huntsman had to use his unique stature to say, look, I joined the administration and was willing to work for this president because I really wanted to get things done for this country and basically make this the insider's tale to be the impetus for his campaign to say, look, Obama doesn't know what he's doing, and I saw it firsthand. We are in chaos in terms of our foreign policy. We are reactive. We are always being nicer to our enemies than we are to our allies. We're constantly bending over backwards with the Russians and with the Chinese, and we keep getting our lunch handed to us in these deals. There is a case to be made, and the case for a guy who was not necessarily going to have the strongest or most conservative record. But the idea that Huntsman could really pitch himself as the epitome of the disillusioned independent or the disillusioned guy who wanted to give Obama a chance and has been deeply disappointed by what he's gotten. Instead, he's playing the role of, you can take your pick of David Brooks, some would say David Frum, some would say Kathleen Parker, the Republican who is criticizing other Republicans from the left. And I, you know, maybe that gets you a certain percentage in New Hampshire. They let independents vote in the primary there. Beyond that, I mean, at one point, you know, John Huntsman himself told me the strategy was win New Hampshire, win South Carolina, and win Florida. Now, maybe you can do okay in New Hampshire with this approach. It's not going to work for you in South Carolina, and it's not going to work with you in Florida. And honestly, there are a lot of states it's not going to work pretty well. So I don't know if this is a Hail Mary pass. I don't know if this is a plea for attention. I don't know if this is what the real strategy is. Other than getting him maybe one or two nice columns about how nicely pleated his pants are from Mr. Brooks, it's really not going to work too well, at least amongst Republican voters.
I guess deep down, his efforts to make sure the independents aren't turned off by something is admirable, but the idea of very potentially alienating a huge portion of your base in order to attract that percentage of the independents seems to be a bad math problem that he didn't quite carry the two or something. I don't know what happened, but his math, I think, is pretty far off on his political calculations.
Yeah, and by the way, like, there are ways to handle all of these issues in a way that is less antagonistic to those who disagree with you.
Right.
My approach on the whole evolution versus creation theory, et cetera, is to say, look, kids, learn what you have to learn to regurgitate it on the test. What you believe about what the world is, how the world is created, is entirely up to you. Schools can't tell you what to think. They can only tell you what you need to do to fill out the dots on the multiple choice tests right. And after you're done, you can forget that if you like.
On to number three now, and let's start number three with a little bit of a short trip down memory lane. Here's then-Senator and Democratic nominee Barack Obama at his acceptance speech in Denver in 2008.
One of the things that we have to change in our politics is the idea that people cannot disagree without challenging each other's character and each other's patriotism. The times are too serious. The stakes are too high for this same partisan playbook. So let us agree that patriotism has no party. I love this country, and so do you, and so does John McCain.
And then after talking a little bit more about, at that time, the war in Iraq, he offered this zinger towards McCain.
So I've got news for you, John McCain. We all put our country first.
Well, Jim, maybe the times aren't very serious anymore. The stakes apparently aren't very high, because here's the president repeating a theme he made consistently on that bus tour last week in his weekly media address.
The only thing preventing us from passing these bills is the refusal by some in Congress to put country ahead of party. That's the problem we have right now. That's what's holding this country back. That's what we have to change.
Jim, once again, I think we're starting to learn that words have different meanings in Barack Obama's world. We learned during the debt debate that if you don't agree with him, you're an uncompromising hardliner. And now, of course, if you disagree with his plan that has no details at this point, you're unpatriotic. Things have changed a little bit, it would appear.
You know, Greg, I could say, oh, I wonder if Jim McDermott was putting his country first when he went to Baghdad and said we needed to trust Saddam Hussein around the eve of the Iraq war. I could wonder if Barbara Lee was putting her country first when she opposed the use of military action against al-Qaeda and the Taliban after September 11th. I mean, if we want to play this game, we can play this game. I think what it more directly illustrates is that when you look deep into Barack Obama, there are certain folks out there who would say deep down he's a socialist. Some who'd say deep down he's an Islamist. Some, you know, everybody sees a lot of nefarious motives and theories there. Sometimes I wonder if he's like an onion where if you just keep peeling, you just get down to nothing. But I'm not really sure that there is any core principles in there, because if you think about it, he just said this is completely the wrong thing in 2008, and now he's embracing it entirely. This was a guy who was going to change our politics, and as Jonah Goldberg is fond of pointing out, reminded us that he thought his real opponent in 2008 was not John McCain, but cynicism itself. And that truly his victory would be an entire concept, an entire way of thinking would be defeated by his victory. Cynicism, not believing the best in each other. And now, as we saw in Politico last week, or maybe it's a little more than that, the message was kill Mitt Romney, that they're going to have to absolutely destroy his character. They're going to have to paint him as weird, certainly an insinuation that religion was going to be an issue in that. The guy who said he was going to transcend negative Washington politics was willing to completely embrace them if that's what it takes to keep him in office. There is nothing to Barack Obama other than empty ambition and other than his core belief is that he should be in power and everything else is subjugated to that. And I think more and more Americans are clear on this. I think there's a certain whiff of desperation as you see the administration make these kinds of moves. Whether the American people will enough Americans will be fooled by this again, we'll have to wait until November 2012 to see that. But I think the fact that, well, let's just say you and I have both enjoyed vacations in the past week. Maybe the president really needs his this week now.
That's exactly right. Hopefully he's figuring something out, mainly not how to try and paint himself as just the emblem of self-pity, because it's not very becoming, especially when you presented yourself as the one to end all partisan strife. I guess he's failed on that one, too. Promise not kept. Expiration date 2011. Jim, have a great day. Welcome back. Talk to you tomorrow.
Good to be back, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Tuesday at this time for the next 3 Martini Lunch.